Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, the fluoridated, the fabulous, the somewhat mantastic, considering that our wonderful Prime Sinister is now helping to cover up for other people that are, let's just say they are members of his party and they've been convicted of child abuse and pedophilia stuff and he won't release it to the public. Let's just say that. You know, he's kind of like, well, come on, bro. It's not that bad that half of my cabinet ministers are like pedophiles and child abusers. I mean, come on, bro. You know, stop making a big deal of it. You gotta be freaking kidding me, you know. And you know, it's so ridiculous that people won't believe it. Isn't that funny? That the truth sounds so ridiculous that people couldn't even believe it. And that lies, which are also so much more ridiculous than the truth itself, come on through. Because they're basically just so much nicer to hear, aren't they? There's a big line forming behind the comforting lies queue. But there's nobody waiting for the really, really harsh truths, is there? Except you, the listeners to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. And your contributions pay for absolutely everything that I do. I'm producing videos. I'm producing radio. I'm helping out activists to tell their stories when they don't possess the skill or the technology to do it themselves. And I'm making a documentary coming up. I will need a new, more powerful, significantly, computer in order to do that. And we are raising funds at the moment at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. We're about $2,000 in of our $8,000 target. And we raised that in the first couple of days over Christmas. And I haven't really told anybody about this since then. So if you really want to see a documentary that covers all of this eclectic stuff, you know, all the little interconnectedness things, but just touch on them and explain how they relate to each other in a succinct, easy fashion where it's not that difficult to understand and it's actually quite funny and obvious how it all fits together, then please go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com today and make a donation. And make sure you tell me it's a donation for the new computer, which is going to be about $6,000 New Zealand dollars, only about 4,000 US, conveniently. But that has so much grunt that I won't just be able to make a documentary. I'll also be able to save time on everything that I do. You know, whenever you're sitting there processing something, it can be done in an instant instead of waiting for about 20 or 30 minutes and not being able to do anything else on the computer at that point and driving you nuts. If you know what I mean. And anybody who edits for a living knows what I mean. Anyway, I am so sorry to keep talking on because I'm keeping my guest waiting and it's incredibly rude of me. His name is Jeffrey Slater. Jeffrey, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Vinnie. How are you doing, Vinnie?
Somewhat fabulous is normally my standard response, but at the moment my nose is pissing out snot like a fire hydrant, and I am coughing up more stuff than an entire TB ward. So, not so fabulous today, but I'm hanging in there.
But you're still on, and you're still doing it, and that's kind of what these times need, is someone who's just willing to do it no matter what it takes. So, thanks for the work you're doing.
Yeah. Well, like the thing song says, nobody can save you now. It's do or die.
I think the only people we're going to, the only way we're going to save this planet is we all have to save ourselves, right?
And pretty that's much. What's coming. If everybody takes individual responsibility, it alleviates the need for an authority figure to tell you what to do.
Yeah, and that's hopefully where we're heading. I was listening to your comment about a documentary. Documentaries are, I mean, I have thousands of documentaries on my website because I find them incredibly useful. It's like the new library. I wasn't the best reader in school, and now I listen to tons of documentaries because I find I get the information that is stranger than fiction, which sometimes I've discovered, like you said, that truth is stranger than fiction. So, thanks.
Well, I think a famous guy once said that the problem with writing fiction is that it has to make sense. The truth doesn't have to.
Right. And a lot of the great movies that are fiction tend to have a bit of the truth woven into it.
Yeah. I mean, otherwise people just wouldn't believe it, and they'd say, oh, this is a really unrealistic premise for a film. I'm just not going to see that or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
Jeff,
thanks for pushing the polls out there.
Well, I'd like to now hear from you just a little bit about who you are and what it is you do.
Well, I'm really just I'm a guy, you know. I'm a professional human being, I guess. But I do have experience as far as working with people about supporting them and building more of the lives that they want from their perspective, not what culture says they have to build. And so I speak all over the world on those subjects. And sometimes I've discovered that the mainstream doesn't always have a lot of the answers to support people in growing themselves at the level that they want to and that they're committed to. So I tend to not just learn from regular corporate business books, but also from the stuff on the fringes, the stuff that, you know, it's like there's a saying, they said, like the shamans and the people in the medicine men, they're the ones that are on the outside of the jungles. They put them on the edge of the community, but they're the ones that have some of the knowledge. So it's important to understand all aspects of that's out there, which is not just what the mainstream says. Culture can be the enemy, as Terence McKenna says.
Well, that's the larger scheme at play here. We see over time a massive split between the younger and older generations, which I think is a great loss because, A1, the elders have knowledge and wisdom, and the youth have energy and creativity. And
yeah,
if you split those two apart, it basically cuts in half the potential of either side.
Yeah, and I'm finding, you know, after, because when I train and I speak in all these different countries, I'm actually finding the youth are much more willing to consider other alternatives of information, because I think that they're kind of tired of the mainstream indoctrination that goes on to majority of the school systems. Now, there are school systems that are still good out there, but there's a majority of them need some work. I'm sure you've encountered that too.
I don't know. I haven't actually encountered a school system that worked, mostly because the only school systems I've encountered are public school programs, which indoctrinate kids and turn them into frickin' cogs in a machine instead of creators and traders.
Yeah, yeah, it's sad. And at the same time, I'm noticing a real demand and a movement towards people wanting to rebuild the education system from the ground up in a different way. But it's not happening fast enough. And that's actually why I like connecting with people like you, because you sometimes say the things that need to be said to disrupt things, which is necessary in order for transformation to happen.
Well, there's an old saying, democracy is kind of like stew. If you don't stir it up every now and again, you get a layer of scum that accumulates on the top.
So it's good to be stirred. So I, you know, mainly my background, just so people understand where I'm coming from this information, is I tend to bridge both worlds. I do have the experience of being an entrepreneur and having built successful businesses and made lots of mistakes. I grew up in Silicon Valley, which is the birthplace of a lot of the big companies out there. I grew up in an entrepreneurial family. We had very little money to begin with, and then my dad did have some wins with a company, with a big company that ended up doing well. So I know what it's like to have very little finances and struggle. I also know what it's like to where you do have the money you need to make the choices you want. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that it still frustrates me that people even need this thing called money at this time, because it is still a slavery system. And I find myself bridging both of these worlds, which is this world of we still have to make ends meet, and then the other world of a new era that's being born, which is us coming together as a human family, where that will no longer be necessary. But I kind of am that world bridger between both those worlds at this point. So I guess I'm known as working with CEOs when they've made all the money, they've had the success they want, and they're a lot of times miserable because they've disconnected from themselves because they've been playing the mainstream game for a long time and their company has lost the passion. But until then, until this system, if
well,
it does
can,
fall
can I,
apart.
Can I just cut in here, Jeff? Because
yeah.
What really occurs to me here is it's a difference between what people are actually valuing. And I think it's kind of like, what did I say the other day? It's some people's belief that working harder means basically being more exhausted and having nothing to show for it. And other people sometimes believe that working harder means you're actually achieving something with your life instead of stagnating. And I think I heard some real wild statistic out of the mainstream media years ago. I can't recall the source. But it said something along the lines of every 7 years, on average, the average American will completely change their career path. So they'll go from being an accountant to a marine biologist or something wacky like that. You know what I'm saying? And I don't know. The conclusion that I draw from that is the same conclusion that I drew from my experience in the workforce. I wasn't being me, and I wasn't advancing myself as a human being by following somebody else's orders and making someone else's money and fulfilling somebody else's dreams in the hope that I can only have enough coin to survive.
Yeah, and it's... And sometimes I've discovered that people have to, they go through that and then they hit this point where enough is enough. And then they go on their own internal journey. And people are all over the planet are waking up to the fact that that's not really playing that game. It doesn't actually have them realize fulfillment. You know, I went through it myself. I wanted to go out and make a lot of money. And so I did some of that. But it didn't actually lead to this a deep level of fulfillment and connection to wanting to connect and see the symbiotic relationship between me and my fellow human family and the planet and everything else. But I'm glad I went through it, but man, it's so important to reconnect. And I think I'm talking to anyone listening to this. There's no way you would have found this radio show if you weren't someone that wasn't connected to yourself or on the quest. So,
well, that doesn't include, all the NSA agents listening, but yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, there's a thing that humanity will in the end prevail, and that's what will happen because we're very committed. But we just have to get this the best information out there for people to become and make their own choices in their life, and that's just what needs to happen.
Well, speaking of committed, it reminds me of something my grandfather said. Sister asked him, "So why did you marry Grandma?" And he says, "Well, we both worked in a mental hospital. It was all about commitment."
Well, when I say commitment, I mean committed to ourselves and who we are. Not the commitment like go get a job and, you know, become a slave to the system.
Yeah. Haven't people come to that kind of like broad base assumption that I'm actually meant for something better than this, you know? They are.
If I can share, you know, I'm seeing this all over the world because I present in 13 different countries all over the place, and I'm actually noticing a massive, just to instill some hope for anyone listening, I'm seeing a massive awakening that's going on, an increase the last 2 years especially, of people questioning reality more and more and questioning, does it have to be this way? And so I see great hope for humanity in that aspect, and also a lot of sadness. There's a lot of sadness going on is what I'm noticing. Are you noticing the same thing out there? What are you kind of seeing?
To be honest, I've retreated somewhat from the face-to-face encounters that I used to do when I was a yurt. In terms of real touch with people I don't know in the foreground, very, very little experience on that front. I mean, apart from maybe social media, but, you know, it's all up in the air. I don't know what I'm seeing.
Well, there's got to be people like you working behind the scenes in those things, and then there's people out maybe a little more in the mainstream. And I'm sharing with because someone like you, you're working behind the scenes to bring out this incredible information that is earth shaking and makes people question everything. And sometimes it's important to bring the stuff out there to the mainstream a little bit and in digestible bits so that it doesn't totally explode the world too quickly.
Yeah, that's why the principle of my life in terms of trying to inform people about stuff is making terrible jokes or crappy puns on occasion, you know, just sort of to ease the tension. For example, do you know where a walrus keeps sperm?
Where?
In his walnuts.
So you get a mix of George. Who is it? George Carlin. Who's that comedian that started? That was just awesome. He was just so good.
Well, there's George Carlin. There's Bill Hicks. And
yeah, George Carlin. That guy's an absolute genius. Comedy. He had a way of speaking the truth in a comedic way. It was quite great, actually.
Now, you said something before when you were saying that people were working behind the scenes, and it triggered a thought. It's the seventh man. You know, when you're trying to tell somebody something that's so far outside their paradigm, you and you alone, no matter how much evidence you got, no matter how good and slick a talker you are, they will not accept it, all right? Not the first time, not the second time, nor the third, but the seventh time, on average, when somebody introduces an idea that's outside of your paradigm, that is when they will wake up. That is when they will come to the realization. That's when they will actually develop an interest in looking into things for themselves, not before then. And this is why people get so... it's why people get so frustrated when they're trying to convince their family members of something that's so obvious. I'll show my family members of a bag of fluoride, for example, that has a skull and crossbones and a level 6 maximum biotoxin classification on it, and guys in hazmat suits dumping it into the water supply because it's good for your teeth. And they're like, yeah, what's wrong with that? It's diluted. You know? Okay. Right. The brain naturally protects itself. It keeps itself secure, just like your body.
Yeah, it's identity coherence. Maintaining identity coherence is very important for human beings. And I often will tell them, we have to become skeptical. A true skeptic has to become skeptical about their skepticism for just a moment.
You know, interestingly enough, I posted on Facebook about that the other day. Have you ever noticed that skeptics aren't skeptical of anything that the establishment says? All right? They don't equally apply it. And they say that in order to question any of this, you have to have a qualification of some kind. So it's like, bro, are you telling me that if somebody wants to question anything, they have to spend several years and get into astronomical debt in a government or corporate finance mind control institution and then obtain a piece of paper before they come out, before they can even start questioning anything that's currently within that small sphere of knowledge, that one qualification that they achieved? Are you freaking kidding me?
Right.
We're not machines. I mean, I'm not a graphics card that can only do that one thing, that one job. Oh, you got to have a motherboard as well, Vinny Eastwood's not enough.
Well, you know, one piece of information at a time. And there's another one of my coaches, he said that all feedback is received. It's just a matter of when. So every piece of feedback that is done is someday received. And when I work with, I'm finding actually with my executive clients that are in some of these companies that they actually are starting to question reality more. And they're finding that by doing that, they're actually starting to incorporate more of the planet and more of the people into making it become as important as profits. And that's something that's really important for the planet to sustain, because we've got this kind of battle going on between humanity and corporations, right? And if we don't instill a little bit of people and planet into these corporations are basically going to destroy our planet, which then those corporations won't be very sustainable for very long if that happens either. So we've got – and the CEO or the owner of the businesses that can begin to challenge – their relationship to reality actually has more fluidity in their thinking and are better thinkers and more productive and more engaging, and they can think through problems more effectively. So I'm just finding that the ability to be fluid in thought and the ability to be skeptical about your skepticism gives you and humans that are listening, people that run businesses, the opportunity to actually build a more successful business that works for the world and not just for profits.
Well, it's about what your goals are, kind of thing. I mean, if you only have one goal, I heard of this place that manufactures health products, basically, really good ones, and they have a triple bottom line, which means bottom line is profit, but also equal to profit is the ability to sustain them. So whatever they take, they have to give back. And yes. The third one is making sure that whatever they produce benefits and does not negatively affect their customers. Now, could you imagine what a cosmic shift would happen if McDonald's applied that triple bottom line? And you're like, okay, we're not going to be damaging the environment anymore without compensating for it in equal parts damage, and we're not going to be selling food that is bad for people. Would McDonald's still even freaking exist?
What a concept, right? It's just, if that happened, and when it does, because in order to be sustainable, it has to happen. And that's what I do, is I work with companies to have that actually happen. And that's why I like to bridge both these two worlds. And if that happens, we will get our planet back, and we will start to move towards a direction that actually is harmonious with the relationship between us and Mother Earth and each other. But until that happens, we're just going to destroy our planet. And it's making me sick, and it's making everyone listening to this, I'm sure, frustrated with the fact that that's going on. And so anyone that's listening that has a business, what you just said, please incorporate that triple bottom line, where that becomes just as important, or else we're just not going to make it.
Don't destroy stuff in order to make your product, and don't destroy the people with the product, as well as make a profit. I mean, am I talking Spanish here? Come on.
Well, I feel like it's coming. That day is coming, and if it doesn't, I think it was Einstein that said, "If we have a third world war, it'll be the last war."
Yeah. Well, he said something more to the effect of, "I don't know what World War III is going to be fought with, but I know that World War IV is going to be fought with sticks and stones."
Exactly. It's basically that'll be the last one. I'm noticing that some of these companies are really trying to put that stuff in place. I have five elements I like to share with companies, and people can take this away if they want. It makes up I call it a conscious enterprise. Now I'd like to see the day where money's not needed at all. Okay. But, that would be fantastic, because I feel like that day could come.
Now, speaking of which, by all means, Jeff, give people your website and your other information, because this show is both like a bathtub, meaning it doesn't work very well without a plug, and also there's nothing shameful about shameless self-promotion.
Cool. Well, my website's Jeffrey, Jeffrey Slater, Slayter.com. There's tons of docos, and when you launch your doco, we'll put it on my site. Love to have it. Lots of resources so that people can make their own informed choices. I mean, that's really about empowering the individual, right? And we got to empower the individual with information so they can make their own choices. The challenge is most of the mainstream information out there is crap. It's all programmed, and it makes me very frustrated. And this is why people like you that are pushing the fold, and it's important that people consider all the stuff, not just one source of information.
Well, I think there was the former CIA director said words to the effect that every single person of influence in the major media works for the CIA.
That's full on.
You know, I mean, there was these people like sitting out front of Langley with this big pole and banner that says that, and people still believe the news.
Yeah. Well, when they realize that the agenda behind it, maybe they'll start to make their own choices inside. And I feel like if people are listening to this, they probably are the types of people that are willing to consider alternatives, and they're autonomous to their choices.
Hey, can I make a point here? I'm sorry, this is just kind of like popped up. You know how people are always asking for solutions and things of that nature? Don't you think that if you're giving people solutions, I mean, not necessarily this way, but if people are only asking for solutions from other people, doesn't that mean that they don't have the ability to problem solve on their own, and that's why they need to come up with their own unique contribution solution to the whole thing and do their own research and find out and their own, put their own mind to it?
Yeah, absolutely. People have to do their own research and come to their own conclusions. The only valid experience is the only thing valid is direct experience. So go, I mean, That's the only thing about in today's world is actually seeking direct experience versus just hearsay. So go seek the experience. Go do the research online yourself. I mean, the challenge that we're seeing out there is people are so busy trying to make ends meet. They're so busy. They go to a job. They come home. They turn on the TV, which is designed by somebody else to share certain bits of information. Then they go to their job again. They don't have any time because it's part of the design of the system. They don't have time to actually do the contemplation, the internal introspecting that's necessary, and to go find the facts online or even out in the world. I mean, anyone that's traveled knows that there's so many answers that lie by just taking some adventures, but everyone's a slave to the, many people are slaves to the system, so they can't do that. And that's very frustrating. So, I don't know. Sorry for my rant there, but that's what I'm passionate about.
Well, no, it's good because it's reciprocated, man. And my thoughts on this is, going back to the seventh man, is that basically each individual's contribution, just a simply interaction with other human beings or whatever you say, whatever you do or whatever, the seventh man effect is in play. You never know. That person who you tell about the bisphenol alanine on the receipts that they're printing out or something might have had six other people say that before you and suddenly decide to quit their job giving people receipts with poison on them every day and touching it every day. You never know.
I haven't even heard that one. That's new.
Well, there you go.
That's actually, wow, okay. So is that, well, we could, that's probably a whole nother show, but
it's so basically in all plastics, inks, and everything. It's an estrogen mimicker. So it'll basically, the worst case scenario for each of it is it causes breast cancer in men and girliness in boys.
It's coming from all directions. It's so vast. It's hard to even conceive of it. You know, it's a kind of a rabbit hole in itself, isn't it?
Well, I've talked about the rabbit hole web, kind of like individual rabbit holes that are splitting up in every. It's more like a wormhole, actually, going through the galaxy about a billion different star cluster locations put out throughout the universe that all have these different channeling beings of influence or some random crappy analogy like that. But ultimately, it comes down to the fact that there is endless information in every single direction, and I call it fractal scumbaggery. Scumbaggery is the actions, motives, and portents of a scumbag. So, and a fractal is kind of like a hologram. So if you zoom into it, the hologram actually starts to repeat that exact pattern that you saw when you first started zooming in and repeat it again and again and again. You see the same thing time after time, the closer that you look. And this goes more or less for everything. The more you look, the more you will see.
Yeah, I like to kind of take adventures and go into the jungle and things and spending time with some of these elders out there that are the medicine men and these people. I've discovered that they are they've said that we are almost like each of us are each embryos, or we all have our own universes, or we are fractals of a universe in Mother Earth's like galactic womb. Now we're getting a little out there in that perspective, but really when it comes down to it, I really the fractal thing, because when I look in my own eyes, I see galaxies in my eyes, but people don't relate to themselves as that. Often people don't relate to themselves as that. They relate to themselves as just a thing, which is part of the system, and they need to. And if the more people can step out of that and see that they are a fractal of a grander whole, and another saying is as above, so below. So anything we do down here actually affects above and vice versa.
It's absolutely true. And as evidence for that claim, scientists recently took a picture of the universe, you know, quite as it were, a pictorial representation. And they compared it to a human brain cell via a microscope, and they were virtually identical in shape and appearance. Every single one of your brain cells is a little universe. Like, have you ever seen Men in Black? How the mm-hmm. cat had a like a miniature galaxy wrapped around its neck, sort of thing.
Yeah.
At the very end of the film, they zoom out of New York and out of our solar system and all the way out into our galaxy. And there's these big aliens that are playing with them like marbles or whatever. And it's kind of like a comedic representation of to a large extent, what's really happening. What was his name? Thomas Brown from New Zealand. He did a little bit of research into red dwarf star clusters. And it turns out that these things are kind of like in a spiral sort of pattern. You can see an indentation of sort of like a red star cluster free space that kind of goes round in a spiral throughout this big red mass of these billions upon billions of stars. These things are huge, makes our galaxy look like a pinhead. And what's happening is that right in the middle of that spiral, a little light starts coming up that's brighter than all the rest, and then it travels all the way out to the end of the spiral and emerges as a fully formed galaxy. It's kind of like this cosmic reproduction thing. And the woman who wrote the book called Punk Science, they've debunked the official black hole theory, which is everything gets sucked into it and it's big. It's actually more like a cosmic vagina. And that's why there's so many massive clusters of suns in the center of galaxies, because the black holes are actually giving birth to more and more of them, and they travel out the spiral as well, just like the original galaxy traveled out of the red dwarf. And you can see that exact same cycle happening in human life, with our embryos, with our cells, with our reproductive cycle. Everything is the same, or at least works in much the same way as everything else, just on a different scale.
Yeah, it's all parts affect the whole, and as above, so below. You were just saying that book, the name of that book was just called Punk Science?
Yeah.
It reminds me, there was, I was listening to a talk, and it said people oftentimes don't take into consideration where science actually began. And so it's always good to, science has its place at times, and science also at times is completely off. And just like theories are off, and it's important to look at all sides and be fluid. Like Bruce Lee says, we got to be like water in our thinking. And so I went on a little research on my own. I figured, okay, let's figure out where science actually began. And there's a guy named Rene Descartes. I probably pronounced his name wrong. I'm a horrible speller. So R-E-N-E-D-E-S-C-A-R-T-E-S. And what happened was he was 19 years old when he supposedly founded modern science. And he was soldiering across Europe on the evening of, I think, in 1619, which, by the way, this same date that he discovered this was the same date as Einstein, the birthplace of Einstein. The same place that he discovered science was the birthplace of Einstein, which is kind of just interesting.
Oh, what a tangled web we weave.
Exactly. And what happened was, it's so fascinating, science was born when he had a dream. Okay? This is how science was born, according to this. And the dream, and an angel came to him. Okay, that's not science right there, by the way. An angel came to him. Okay, an angel came to him and said, the conquest of nature is to be achieved through number and measurement. And that's where it was actually, supposedly, modern science was found. So sometimes the most rational are found in the most irrational experiences. And at the same time, it led me to question. I said, I would question the intent of this angel as well, because an angel coming out and say the conquest of nature is to be achieved through numbers and measurement. That's an interesting statement.
And if you believe in angels, surely you believe in demons, and you do realize that they're a deceptive lot, right?
Exactly. So there's, as you know, probably there's synthetic light and organic light. And that's it. When I read that statement from Rene, from the beginning of modern science, I was like, okay, first it's an angel that came in, and that was the board, and it said to conquest nature. Anything that's going to work well with nature is going to work symbiotically with nature, has no interest in conquesting nature. So that's the beginning of modern science. And people, go look it up. It's fascinating for whoever's listening.
Well, it seems to me that religions actually had a big play on science throughout the years. For instance, you know who piloted the Big Bang Theory? Well, I guess it was the Catholic Church, whose frickin' assumption was that God just banged everything up in the first frickin' place anyway.
Yeah, well, I mean,
that was a big leap, guys. You need a telescope for that theory, did you?
Yeah, that's a pretty big theory. That all they need is, like there's a saying, all they need is one miracle, and then the rest they can make up from there. So, I think that the answers lie to be able to look. There's dogmatic science, and then there's science, which is questioning. And the way a true scientist works is they're willing, when they're proven wrong, they get excited. And that's when you know you don't have you're out of the story of dogma.
I get excited when I'm wrong because it means I'm freaking learning something for a change instead of being right all the time. I hate being right because I'm really cynical.
Exactly. So when we can strip the dogma out of science and is when we're going to have a change in how people relate to it, and people will no longer base their reality of who they are based on a lot of the dogmatic science is going on out there.
Well, I think it's the idea to come up with creative solutions to problems that we're really talking about here in terms of the entrepreneurial spirit. Somebody who comes up with something original is willing to take risks, put their life on hold in order to get these things to fruition or whatever. It's not entirely dissimilar from how an artist will come up with an idea in their head and then they will put pen to paper or paintbrush to canvas or fingers to keyboards in order to create something. And I was just thinking about this the other day, Jeff, about the influence that we're capable of inflicting on the macro, all right? So all the way down the ripples of reality and scales and everything. Our unique gift as human beings is that we can think of things that don't exist yet and then build them and bring them into reality. And then you start to actually affect other things in reality. But that doesn't happen if you don't cross the Rubicon. If you've got an idea in your head and you're just like, oh, I'm going to make this documentary, it's going to be really great, it's going to convince everybody that 9/11 was an inside job, and then you never actually go out and take any footage, interview any people, take any of that time and effort to will that vision into existence, how many people do you affect with your idea? Zero.
An artist is somebody that is willing to go outside of this dimension, pull information from outside this dimension, and bring it forth into this dimension. That is an artist, and that it takes imagination. Einstein, he said, imagination, logic will get you from A to Z. Imagination will get you everywhere else, right? So whether you're an artist or you're here to disrupt things, to challenge the status quo, or an entrepreneur, and our job as entrepreneurs is to solve problems. And so if anyone's listening to this that is an entrepreneur in any sort of way, we've got a problem on our hand, which is the human family's killing ourselves. And so anything we can do to solve this problem and to bring us together would be an entrepreneurial project worth solving. And like you said, going inside of ourselves, the deepest parts of ourselves, and pulling out solutions from our innermost selves into this reality is what we need to do. And that takes an imagination and takes creativity.
It also takes terrible jokes. For example, what do you call somebody who creates a business around finger food? An entrepreneur.
Perfect. So we need people to get out there and start eating more finger food.
Yeah, it'll change the freaking universe as we know it.
That's right. There it is. It'll solve everything.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of which, let's think about this it's a universal contamination era. I think we're starting to realize that we're living in now. So right now, as we speak, both you and I, and probably everybody listening, is currently being bathed in some form of EMF or EMR, microwave radiation, or whatever that is causing your cells to act in some form of stress response emitted by the dirty electricity for the cables in your walls, the power sockets around you, and the devices that you may be next to that are playing this broadcast. And it's not just that. You probably ate something today that wasn't digestible by the human stomach. You know? You probably drank something that had some trace minerals of chemical contamination. You probably don't have a Geiger counter, so you don't know exactly how much radiation there is. Real radiation, like cesium-131 and goodness knows what the heck else. Plutonium being released by Fukushima or whatever into the air in droves and massive amounts. You won't see the effects of that for years. So you learn to live with it. Don't we? We kind of accept it as a reality that everything from our environment, the things we put in our body, and things we hear and see and put in our minds are contaminated in some way. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I fully agree. And and that's why I like to work with the entrepreneurs, because I feel like that we can build stuff that can solve a lot of these problems. Unfortunately, a lot of the entrepreneurs created these problems in the first place. They might not have known what they were creating in the first place, but if we can create something that can actually work and empower individuals instead of these EMFs and all these things that are going on, the chemicals in our food, I feel like the entrepreneurs out there can actually solve a lot of these problems. I think we have all the resources that we need to help us go back to reconnect to ourselves at an organic level. Otherwise, what we're going to have is we're going to have complete transhumanism and people won't even know it.
Do you think that there's actually a sliding scale to entrepreneurship? Like somebody peaks their creativity and then basically it just fizzles out and there's nothing there anymore? And they just become a cog in a wheel instead of somebody who's building them?
I feel like many of the entrepreneurs, when they hit the point, when they've built what they wanted to build externally, and it's not all, and a lot of them they've made the money, they've hit that point, and there's this still, they haven't quenched the thirst of satisfaction and fulfillment. If they don't ever hit that point, then they do peak in their creativity. But if they hit that point and they realize that they'll never be fully fulfilled by anything external ever, and when they go, if they hit that point and then they go inside of their set themselves, they will unearth a new level of creativity and it will never stop. But as long as they think that they're going to get fulfilled by anything external, I think the creativity is stifled.
So it's not entirely dissimilar from the muscles. As soon as you stop exercising your muscles, they start to atrophy and eat themselves and become useless.
Yeah, I think it is similar. Yeah, I think you're right, because the entrepreneurs, when they got started, they might have had a passion for something and it caused them to search within them, to search inside themselves, and then they brought forth something new. But the only way we're going to solve a lot of these problems in the planet is when the entrepreneurs start developing things that work symbiotically with the planet, and they start incorporating those, people, planet. It's okay to have some prosperity while they're doing it. And then they persevere, and then they make some. They actually, if they incorporate those elements into there, then they can keep their creativity alive. Because part of keeping your creativity alive means sometimes taking a walk with your shoes off and your feet in nature to reconnect to yourself.
Do you think there's an agenda to, in a very general way, suppress the resurgence of people's potential to have creativity?
I feel like the agenda is an opportunity, if there was one, for entrepreneurs to really discover their strength and vitality, because it's just like working out. It's like, yeah, you know, if that's there, they get stronger and stronger and stronger while they push against that. And then they really discover their voice. And they might discover that it's not their voice that's the message, it's their life. And their life becomes a message, and everything that they do becomes an expression of that message. So, from day one, when we're born, there is an agenda to feed and become a part of a cog in a machine. There's no doubt about it. And we can look at that as disempowering, or we can see it as an empowering opportunity for us to really break through that machine and discover our strength and our vitality and who we really are. So it's all really a matter of perspective, a matter of perspective that I've come to learn, because I used to get really pissed about it, and I still get pissed sometimes. But now, at the same time, I've kind of come to realize that that I got to look at it in a way as an opportunity, and it's the only way that I don't get upset all the time.
Well, I think being in touch with your emotions is kind of like a two-way split. It's, yeah. You know, sometimes it's actually really good. It can be far more motivating to be angry than through indifference.
Yes.
But what's problematic is that if you're angry all the time, you sort of burn out. And I wanted to know exactly, is there a burnout point as well? Like, for creativity, are there limits to how many hours a day or what people can really do? Because, of course, imposing any kind of arbitrary limit, basically it sets a bar for the real onto it people who like to push bars and things of that nature. It's almost like because you gave something a limit, somebody tried to push it.
Right, right. I can only speak from my experience of doing it, and I've discovered that I don't think I was made to work 20, you know, the entire 8 a.m. till 7 p.m. nonstop. And I'm not as productive. I'm not as creative. I think that was something that was part of indoctrinated into at a young age that I needed to do that. So I challenged that. And what I found was by working where I spend some time doing some work in a empowering environment with some nature around me. And then after maybe an hour and a half, I just stop and I go outside and I maybe even play some music or something. And then when I feel like it, I go back in again. I actually get more done in a day with these intervals. And that for me, I feel like I'm working more in a harmonious state with myself than I am just trying to grind through it. And I find I get more done. I've tested both. That's just from my experience.
Yeah, I'd probably say that's a true for me as well. I mean, I don't like getting up early. And sometimes at 3-4 o'clock in the morning, that's when the best ideas come to me. And so if I'm awake and working at those times, that's when the real production kind of happens to a large degree. But you can't really do that all the time. You can't burn the candle at both ends. You find that out the hard way, don't you?
I did. You know, I burned it at both ends and I just get worn out. I don't become sustainable. And that's actually what a lot of the companies are doing is they're burning it on both ends for the whole company. And I'm finding that a lot of the CEOs, when they're ready to build a sustainable business that really sustains itself, the CEO and the person at the top, they have to change for their organization to change. I've been brought into companies where they say, oh, come into the company and change my middle management. I'm like, well, the only way your whole company is going to transform and you'll make more prosperity and you'll become more sustainable is you have to shift at the top, because change actually happens a lot of times in transformation at the top. So when that CEO becomes more sustainable with themselves, that means they might take breaks, like you said. They might come wake up at 3 a.m. and do some work and then go back to bed. And they start working within the natural rhythms of themselves. Then what begins to happen is their company then starts to become more productive because they are, and they become more sustainable.
It's kind of like how many hours you put in versus what you're actually doing. Because I always found that getting kept to a clock schedule as opposed to my natural rhythm, like I didn't like set lengths of periods during school and things like that.
Yes.
Like it's six periods a day and they're all 55 minutes each and you have 2 minutes to get to the other class. And all. And I was just like, bro, I don't even want to get out of bed until at least 10 a.m. And he forced me out of bed at least 7 a.m. in order to be at school by effing 8 a.m. And I can't even think for the first 2 hours because I'm so freaking tired and my brain isn't working, so that I have to start drinking coffee at a very young age and start to like go nuts a little.
Yeah, it is. It is nuts. I mean, it is. The system is absolutely nuts. It doesn't work. It's designed. I've kind of discovered that there's like this organic time, which is the one that moves with us, and then there's synthetic time. If I look at a digital clock, that makes me feel kind of like the sense of anxiety or frustration, versus if I look out at a river, that's organic time. So that beginning school system where they say start here, end here, start here, end here, it's ludicrous. And what I've discovered with the entrepreneurs that build businesses that are successful, that work, is they actually work to their own clock. And they first put their focus on designing the life that they want first, and then they build a business to support that life. But they have to reach inside themselves, and I've had to reach inside myself and go, what is the life I want? And then I build a business to support that particular life, versus many entrepreneurs out there, they start with, I want to build a business, and they try and jam their life into it. And I've also seen that many people, if they could, the first step, this is why I'm so adamant about entrepreneurism, is because entrepreneurs, we go out and we solve problems. But the first step in being an entrepreneur is go out and buy your time back. And when you buy your time back, you're dismantling and disrupting the system a little, just enough. It's the first step, is buying your time back. When you've got your time back, you can do the research. You can question reality. You can spend time in the forest. You can surf. You can enjoy yourself. You can start getting connected to that organic timeline again. And when we get connected to organic timeline and we bought our time back, we then become creative. We then invent new things. We then put a stop to this stuff that's going on, that these EMFs and all this, these things are destroying the planet. And we can invent new things that work symbiotically with our Earth and with us.
I had this reminds me of a conversation I had with a relative the other night. He was kind of like saying that my dad would be ashamed of me because if he found out what I was doing, you know. And I was just like, oh, my dad voted for the McGillicuddy Serious Party of New Zealand, whose only policy was that they would disband Parliament if they were ever elected because they didn't want to represent people. They wanted people to be free, you know. So I think dad would be immensely proud of me, immeasurably. And the thing is, like, this relative is quite wealthy, right? And has a very, very strong work ethic. And I said to him, well, look, I mean, you've achieved a lot in your life. And if you like doing it, you know, so be it. But what I've achieved in the last, I don't know, 6-7 years or so is I created a YouTube channel that has more subscribers than the largest mainstream media entity in New Zealand, the New Zealand Herald.
Yes.
Put more New Zealand activists on American radio than any person in New Zealand history. And I have New Zealand's largest freely accessible online archive of protests, public meetings, and speeches and interviews with activists than anybody in history has ever created, even more than the New Zealand archives, by myself before I even hit 30. In fact, that was what I was achieved by 2012. It's simply gotten bigger since then. And
well, you're just that level of success. I mean, this guy, he might have material success and all that, but it's a different measurement. So your KPI is reach. And when I say KPI, it's key performance indicator. You have, that is a level of success, and that has been achieved. He's just measuring it differently. So it's a matter of what's important that you're measuring.
What I said to him, Jeff, is like he compared his son to me, and he said his son, who'd never had a job in his life, is now saving $1,500 a month for his first home, right? Because he just got a big job at a telecommunications thing that does Australia and New Zealand kind of thing. And I was just like, well, look at it this way. Every man has his own path, and it's not for every man to measure another man's with his own yardstick. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Jeffrey Slater is my guest, and we will be right back after the break. Bear in mind, not only is this a listener-supported broadcast, but it's also a listener-supported network. So if you want to support the network, go to freedomslips.com, or if you want to support my show as well, go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and subscribe to make a small monthly donation today. We'll see you after the break. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the reverberating Vinnie Eastwood Show. Because, Jeff, it appears your speakers are up a little too high, son. That's much better. All right. Welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. And I would like to remind people yet again that I'm making a documentary and I simply need a new computer that's simply grunty and powerful enough to do it. At the moment, I have cleared most of the hard drive space on my current Mac, and yet still, editing videos that is beyond the 30-minute mark starts to have significant delay simply because of a problem with just not enough grunt. So in order to make a 90-minute film that's got, like, more imagery and little audio recordings and things of that nature, it's going to be very complex and very enthralling, I can assure you. And I can also assure you that my computer that's current is not capable of that. there's just no way. So if you would please go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com and make a donation today, I would very much appreciate that. I think about $4,000 is the price mark we have sussed out for the new computer. And if you want more information about that, about the, what the documentary is about, and the elements in the equation, we have already bought a new camera and some new tripods and microphones with the initial donations that we received at the tail end of last year. I want to thank all the people who contributed so generously, and in such a such a bad time of year as well. I mean, you humble me with your generosity, and I mean that in a very deep and sincere way. And I think the best example I can have of that was, I think a couple of years ago, I got up in the morning, and you know when you get up in the morning and it's bill day, and you like run to your computer and you think about all the bills in your head, and it's like, rent, power, internet, it's like $500. I don't have $500. So I go and I check my PayPal, and one person had donated me 500 euros. And I was like, whoa. What? Like, if I had the money, who would I just give that amount of money to and expect nothing back? What would that person have to do in order to earn such a thing from me? And I couldn't think of anybody. I couldn't think of anybody who I'd give that money to. But apparently somebody thought I was worth that much. And that's what I mean by I'm humbled by your generosity. And Jeff, what you were talking about earlier in the last segment about running to natural time, at the end of last year, I was approaching that burnout point, to be honest. I'd had a bit of experience with people who were in probably the worst situation for a newsman, because you actually have to have empathy for them. It's like people who've had their children taken off them right after their maid or widower, and their child gets given into a corrupt family court system and gives their child out to pedophiles that have gang connections on the family holidays and things like that, Easter and Christmas, demanding it every year. And it was just like, not only was I working a lot, but I was also taking on board a lot of this emotional energy, and I needed a month off, you know, like a whole month off, so that I could just sit there and process and deal with this pain and the suffering that other people put onto me in the course of my work through the year. And I was able to do that because people donate regularly. They donate like $5 a month, $50 a month, $100 a month. It doesn't matter, because they don't get anything for their donations other than everything that I'm already providing everybody for free anyway. So it's completely voluntary. I get support whether or not I do the work. I just kind of happen to keep doing the work because it needs to be done and ain't nobody else going to do it. So the moral obligation falls upon me to make sure that it gets done. But that means I can also, if I need it, if I'm really burning out, if I'm actually in a desperate situation, I can have that opportunity to recharge. And that's why I'm so grateful to all the people who donate at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Now, Jeff, I think my sense of income is probably a little bit different to a lot of the corporate people that you rub shoulders with, isn't it?
Yeah, but you have a different currency too, and that might be the real currency, which is connection to self and connection to your purpose and what you're here to do. So there are people in the corporate world that start companies with good intentions that are deeply connected and are making a difference. And their income, yes, in that currency might be high, but they also when they can make good prosperity for themselves and also have the prosperity of fulfillment that they're doing something to work together with the planet, and they're bringing in those elements of people, planet, prosperity, and perseverance and purpose. When those are in their company, then yeah, you know, that's true prosperity. But what money without connection or fulfillment, it's pretty much useless. So it's as you make requests, and it reminds me, you know, people ask for twice as much in life, they usually get it. And so the fact that you're asking and it's good, people vote with their dollars. And I've seen people contribute to a cause that they believe in. And, you know, out of all your shows, and I've listened to some, not all of them, but because you have a lot, which is good. But out of all your shows, you have a common thread, which is wake up. Wake up to who we really are as human beings. And people who can decipher and hear that message under there will vote with their dollars, and they should, and they will, to support that message, because humanity is waking up, and that's what's happening. And I guess you know, you kind of spent your time in the background here, but I'd really love to let the people listening to this know that they are, and they are all over the planet, and even the people in the corporate world are, because they've had enough too. They've had not all of them, okay, but even the people in the corporate world are waking up. Well, and the entrepreneurs of the future, they are going to start bringing these elements into the companies so that we can actually have a planet that works.
Well, this is what I talk about when I talk about the seventh man. And I came up with a little idea. It's called the information grenade. You pull the pin, you chuck it in, and you wait for it to blow up in their face later.
And it is. It's actually, you know what? All the guys that are doing the work in the background that are like, where you used to be called this and all those names or whatever that happens, they're actually, those grenades are going off and they're hit, and the frag is hitting people. And it's hitting
really?
People in the mainstream.
I've had the opposite. I think people call me worse names now.
Well, that means that sometimes when people hear the truth, it's like a sword and it hurts.
Well, you know, I mean, maybe sometimes people, they just kind of have to see what you're actually doing. Predominantly as human beings, we're really good at pattern recognition. So if I interview somebody like David Icke, for example, pattern recognition will tell a lot of people that crazy, 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 and do guilt by association and assume that I'm crazy or something like that. When they've never heard David Icke speak and they've never heard me listen to interview him, or any of that. Basically, they're basing an opinion on zero information, only hearsay alone. And this is part of the reason why I think society is so easy to be socially engineered. And I think that's actually been part of a deliberate agenda. Austin Thomas, I think, from the Guerrilla Radio Network recently put on Charlotte Isabey, I think, who wrote the book The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. And we can see this effect happening, particularly in the United States, dropping IQs, the creativity and the manufacturing bases that were once in the United States. The film scripts seem to be getting worse. There's more sequels than original films now. You know, it just seems to be getting dumber and dumber, kind of like Idiocracy in slow motion.
Yeah, and I feel like that is, and I see that happening. I'm also seeing on the other side of it, there's a counter happening where we don't need everybody to wake up to what's going on. It doesn't take as many as people think. It doesn't take 7 billion people. It's a smaller percentage, but as things on the outskirts, the mainstream are getting dumber, but you have a crowd that's beginning to wake up more and more, and it's because of the work of the people that are willing to bring out their swords of truth and start sharing sharing information is why it's starting to work. Having spent time in the States and also spent time in New Zealand is such a wonderful, incredible piece of land and incredible, just it's a beautiful place. So anything you can, I hope the people that are listening, if they're in New Zealand, do everything possible to keep your country, because it is actually an amazing country and the people are really quite cool and quite nice. And you know, I get actually, you can you can actually talk to people there, or in the States, you know, everyone may not be that way, but
people get emotional about it, you know, and they like,
what's that?
Well, the general public seems to get emotional about it, like on comment threads or whatever. They start criticizing the activists or questioning their motives, my motives, etc. And, you know, they're like, well, if you're so patriotic, why are you always criticizing the government? And my standard response is, well, Thomas Jefferson once said words to the effect of it's a patriot's duty to protect his country from his government. And if the government is supposed to represent the will of the people, I don't see it. And so it's my will to serve my people, not the government. And that's why I don't have a government job.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we've got to look after that that place. It's a great place. Good people. And it's one of the few less crowded places in the world that are quite... it's just beautiful. I've surfed out there. I love it there. But, you know, I'm probably talking to New Zealand.
Well, do you remember with the Frankdale analogy? And it's the same goes for New Zealand and corruption or whatever. Like, I think the most poignant example about how you can see this mirroring effect between the effect on the United States and the effect on New Zealand is our 2008 leaders. Barack Obama, who was elected in 2008 for a blue party called the Democrats, and in his first term, after campaigning successfully on a platform of change, borrowed more money than all previous presidents in history combined. John Key, former Federal Reserve banker, got elected in 2008 for the Blue National Party on a campaign platform of change, and in his first term borrowed more money than all previous prime ministers in the world combined. And both candidates have passed immeasurably similar worded legislation in terms of mass surveillance, like the NDAA, more police powers, and basically are shredding whatever Bill of Rights or Constitution that they were meant to protect. And I think, you know, this kind of goes back to a letter that was once sent to Thomas Jefferson about the foundation of America and how they could ensure that the government could only put good men into positions of power and how the Constitution could bring that about. And Jefferson laughed at him and said, there are no good men. There are only good rules by which to chain all men to a set of principles that they can't violate.
Mm.
And unfortunately, we have lost touch with nearly all of those principles over time.
Well, yeah, I feel like when the one of the bigger problems with is going on out there is the problem is they can't actually feel what they're doing to the world. And if they could, and if people in power could feel what they were doing to the world, not just think or know it, but feel it, if they could feel the consequences of their actions, and not like airy fairy stuff, but the direct experience of what they're doing, they might shift. They might shift. But, you know, we can't wait for them to work it out. We've got to do, humanity needs to come together. And, you know, it reminds me of, there was actually an inventor in New Zealand. It was actually, he's passed now, but he had developed something that uses sound to boil water, just sound. And I can't remember his name, but I saw it in a doco.
Was it Death Metal by chance?
Yeah, exactly. It was just pure Metallica driven through this thing, and it made it work. And if they could just play Metallica at the right frequency, it would work. No, but he invented something that created that literally boiled water with sound, and didn't require any resources to do it, or very little resources. And he died with that secret. And if he would have been empowered with some resources, or wanted to bring it out in some sort of way, it could have or the right legislations, it could have solved a lot of the problems right there. So I really feel like and know that the entrepreneurs that can feel the world and the consequences of their actions, when we can step together and bring ourselves together, is when we will solve a lot of these problems that are going on.
Yeah.
And that's my role, is to empower the entrepreneurs in that, and even the CEOs that have woken up. To try and get them back on their organic timelines.
Well, I think it is actually a good idea to help the people who are actually hurting the world to feel the pain that they're inflicting. I think they should impose propose a new members bill, the compulsory waterboarding of Congress bill, which will also have in the legislation, which they won't read, compulsory waterboarding for the executive, the judiciary, and everybody else. You know, not to get answers out of them or anything, just to make them understand the question. Why are we doing this to people? Do you like this? Do you think it's good now, all of a sudden,
that you can't breathe because somebody's pouring water on a cloth on your face?
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, have I missed something here? I think that it's not possible, Jeff, to make these people feel something. Maybe not a percentage of them anyway, because I believe that they're clinically diagnosable sociopaths or psychopaths who literally cannot feel empathy. I don't know if it's possible to make them feel empathy artificially, maybe spike the White House's water supply with weaponized ecstasy or something of that nature, like they developed in South Africa for use on protest crowd. I'm not kidding. And then somebody found out about this weaponized ecstasy that they wanted to use on the South African public, who weren't very happy about racist apartheid laws. And so they said, okay, you're going to have to dump it. So they dumped it in the sea, bro.
Disgusting.
Yeah, and apparently dolphins were humping people all up and down the coast directly afterwards. I'm not making this. Yes, I am making it up, actually.
Well, that'd be a sight to see. I there are definitely, in every society, there's sociopaths, so there's some that are just too far gone. And there are some leaders out there that if they did and found a way to do it, they would wake up. And we've got I have faith that there's got to be, and there are, in some of these top high places where they could be behind the scenes, and that has to be there in order to bring support us in getting our planet back. But yes, there are definitely some sociopaths in any society, which sucks.
Well, but not just in any society, but they tend to, I think there was an article in the Daily Mail or something that said they cluster towards places where there's a hierarchical control structure, like business, media, politics, religion, law, and medicine.
Yeah, that is true. That is very true. And the only way at times someone's got to go in there and see if there's a couple survivors. And you know, like it's like Kennedy actually. Kennedy had to play a little bit of the game, and then yes, he was taken out. But there's got to be kind of somebody's got to go into those nests or to the matrix systems and kind of bridge both worlds until that world falls apart. But someone's got to be able to be on that bridge, and that's kind of what I've noticed. Is if the mainstream can't just throw it all away at this point in time. But there's kind of this balancing act that has to happen for a little while for this transition, and everyone has their role in it. Like everybody's got to have, if everyone's doing what they're here to do, that's according to their heart, then I feel like this thing will work. But they've got to actually connect to their heart, which unfortunately, with all these crazy systems at bay and these EMFs and these just disgusting food that's happening and destroying our planet, it can make it pretty difficult. And so we got to do everything we possibly can to remove this stuff.
Well, that includes mitigating the factors in the interim. And one way that people can do that is if you go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, there's a sliding tablet there for the New Zealand made products called Blue Shield, which generate a frequency effect that mimics the natural vibrating frequency of the earth. So instead of getting all of these nasty little EMF and EMR sources bouncing off you all the time, they will interpret instead the strongest signal available, which would be this one, which is the safe one. So you can get some of them blue shields there. There's portables, plugins, and that sort of thing. Now, on top of this, so we're talking about a current control structure. We're talking about the one guy who will infiltrate the infiltrators, who will sabotage the saboteurs, you know, who will lie to the liars, who will manipulate the manipulators. We're going to have to be talking one crafty son of a, you know, this is going to be a monumentous occasion. Can you imagine it? If somebody actually got elected in the US election and directly after it, everybody's like, what the hell? He's doing what he promised. This guy betrayed us.
I don't think it's possible in the you can't going in the whole system of the election is an interesting system. But as you know, I think that somebody would have to design something brand new. Forget trying to fix this system. Something new has to be completely born and operated inside of. But there's still a transitional phase that needs to happen. Like, you know, like right now, like people need to support your, in order for you to keep going, you have to generate some revenue. And so we're not quite there yet where it's just fully sustainable without money, unfortunately, which makes me upset that business even has to exist. But there's this transition period, which is happening right now, where it's a kind of a world bridger going on. And I don't think it lies in going in fully and infiltrating fully. I think it has to do with creating something brand new that people can get behind.
Well, in terms of generating revenue, I found the smartest way to do it is to generate multiple sources that are passive, so that you don't have to keep tending to them, you don't have to keep doing them. Once they're there and it's coming in, it keeps coming in and it doesn't stop. That's kind of the whole idea why originally when I started out and then ran out of all my money, you know, I used to be a pretty flash salesman back in the day. I literally had a belt buckle that was encrusted with like gems and stuff, bro, that was in the shape of a dollar sign. Like, that's how much of a wanker I was. Can you say wanker? I hope you can.
Yeah, I get it.
I'll just say it again for the effect. I was a wanker. Anyway, I started by asking people for $5 a month just to support what I was doing with my videos and everything at the time. And over time, it has managed to generate one source of passive income. And then there's those who can only pay through PayPal, those who can pay from New Zealand through a KiwiBank account there. And now Google AdSense on my 3,000-ish videos has managed to produce a small pocket of revenue coming in from that source as well. On top of that, we've got sponsors who send me products, like, for example, the Gourmet Soap Kitchen, who send us our deodorants and lotions and soaps and things of that nature. So you get to the point where you're earning enough to survive, and what you need to earn to survive is actually so minimal that it's quite easy. And then you can spend the majority of your time, instead of wondering where the hell your next meal's coming from, busting your ass to expose some scumbaggery and give some people a good platform to share their awesomeness, like yourself.
Yeah, I mean, that's the beauty of entrepreneurism, is that people can buy their time back by doing something that they love that they're here to do. I'd actually be curious, because you have so much, you got a lot of experience in this domain. What would you, because I work with entrepreneurs and everything, I'm just wondering, what would you want the entrepreneurs to know? Because you're kind of, I'm out there in the, you know, more in the public, and then you're kind of doing the behind the scenes stuff, but yet you still have a huge, you know, huge listening base and everything else. I'm just wondering what would be an important thing for the entrepreneurs to know, if there was one?
If you start to get comfortable, start praying that something will mess your life up and take you back to virtually nothing. All right.
And then when they're in that nothing, what would you want them to discover?
That's when you discover that you still have the ability to create something from nothing, like you just did in the first place. All right. To realize that you still got it. Okay. It's kind of like if you're out of the dating game for a while, it's nice to go out and get lucky, because then you realize you still got it.
And that's actually, thank you, because that's actually, it's that feeling of a full self-trust and confidence, because if you can go do something and lose it all and build it back again, and then you do that again, you get a sense of self-reliance and autonomy, which is then you become your own governor of yourself. And that's when you make waves for the planet. And that's what's needed right now, is waves for this planet of the entrepreneurs out there, so they can, and the people out there that have ideas. I'd love to see the people with ideas that have great ideas execute on those ideas, make enough money so they can do just that.
Well, you see, people get this wrong, you know. They pray when they want something good to happen, and that's why nothing good happens, because God's answer to your prayers is generally no. That's why I don't pray unless I want something bad to happen to me, and my prayers get answered just like that. Now, honestly, there was this one time, bro, I was getting starting to get stagnated. I was like, okay, I've achieved all this and all of that kind of stuff. And I was like eating fast food or whatever. I was starting to put on weight. And then I was like, oh my God, I've gotten too comfortable. I'm mooching off my listeners and just basically living high on the hog off the fat of the land. I need to do something about this. So I got down on my knees by the bed, put my hands together. And I said, God, please mess up my life. Please send me some pain and some suffering and some kind of penance for my crime of getting too freaking comfortable and not earning my existence properly. You know what happened the next day, bro? My PayPal account got cancelled. So about 40% of my revenue was just gone.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. PayPal's an interesting one, isn't it? Yeah, they'll just do that. Well, and that's a lot of... That's a lot of what happens is people, many times people are too comfortable in their jobs. They're just too comfortable. They need to step out and do what they're here to do and their own expression that's unique to them. And I find when I get too comfortable, it's time to go inside myself and figure out something that would make me a little uncomfortable. So looking for, I find that seeking, what's the term would be become comfortable being uncomfortable. And that by doing that and becoming comfortable being uncomfortable, you seek out moments that kind of expand, and it's those moments that we feel uncomfortable. And that's kind of what's happening for the planet right now, is this planet feels a little bit uncomfortable. So maybe we're about to give birth to something brand new, even though it looks like absolute chaos right now. There's a saying, if we were to watch, if we didn't know the process of giving birth, I mean, I know we've never been through that, but if we watched a woman giving birth that we didn't know it was a birthing process, it would look like a lot of chaos. It looked like blood and things happening, and it'd be very hard to understand. It would look like everything's falling apart, but then there'd be a birthing process. And so perhaps, I wonder if right now what's happening on Earth and all this chaos and stuff that's happening, is this a birthing process, something brand new? And part of making sure this birthing process happens and a successful birth happens is to stay centered in ourselves while this chaos happens, and stay true to ourselves and bring out and be and do what we're here to do while this process happens and ride through it, because we could be on the verge of something quite incredible. At least I hope.
Yeah. Well, it's what would they say in Fight Club? It's only after you lost everything that you're really free to do anything. And you'll find what happens is as soon as you give up all your comfort and your safety and all of these things that have basically made you cushy and weak, like the people on that ship in Wall-E, you know what I'm saying? Just gotten fat, lazy, and stupid, and had no awareness of the thing that are going on around you. You need to be critical of yourself a lot of the time in order to prevent yourself from becoming the thing that you want to prevent yourself from becoming. You know, it's pretty straightforward, because things come on real slowly, like evil. You know how evil starts? Yeah. By accepting a situation that is wrong because you're unfamiliar with it.
You know, this brings up a good point, is people have become quite passive, and maybe it is time for people to start getting a little bit, or to start getting upset, and to start getting frustrated and do something about it. Instead of just being frustrated, do something. And each of us, whether that's in our businesses or whether that's in our speaking or putting on radio shows, we need to start actually communicating about the frustration as best we actually can. And I believe there's a silent frustration that's going on all over the planet. And when as I go out and I talk, there's this quiet frustration happening. And it's now I think we're at the point where it's okay to start expressing this frustration and look for something new. And perhaps the first step is people start getting out of their comfort jobs and start doing what they're here to do and move those ideas that they have into execution, because ideas are worthless without execution.
I mean, seriously, quit your job and do whatever you have to. But I think what happened with me is that I quit my job and I had like a big cash injection or whatever, and it took a few years to actually, you know, get on my feet. But it was like constantly, every single day, being told by my current wife, not that there was a different wife beforehand, but she was just my girlfriend then, and family and everybody else will discourage you because they're still all trapped in this, I have to do a job for somebody else. I have to forego what I want so that I can earn this so that I can eventually then get what I want. Personally, I completely disagreed with the notion because I know that if I'm spending my life doing something I don't want to do, then by default,
I'm not doing what I want. It's that simple. Don't people get it? It's freaking ridiculous.
If I could share with the people, I know there's people listening to this that have incredible ideas that could make a big difference on the planet. There has to be. Because anyone listening to this has got to, they got to have that creative edge and they're willing to consider new realities. And if anyone's listening to this that has an idea, I would be, if it's okay, I'd like to share a few tips so that they can kind of take their idea, bring into some execution so that they can build a business around it of some sort so they can monetize it so they can buy their time back. Does that work? Can I share a couple tips?
I'm waiting. Go for your life, son.
Cool. All right. So first thing is to build a business to get a business going. First thing is look at your monthly outcomes or your monthly expenses and try to get them as low as you possibly can. So let's say it's 4,000 a month, New Zealand dollars, and that's your monthly expenses. First, get clear about what you bring in and what goes out. That's the first step. Because if you can't be clear about what goes in and what goes out, you won't be able to run a business. So you have to be clear about your money and what's actually going in. The second step is look at somebody else that's doing something similar and see how they got there. If it's not at all similar, find somebody that's done something at least 10 or 20% similar to what you've done. So you can see the pathway that they did. The third thing, a big mistake I notice is they try to get it, oftentimes entrepreneurs try to get it perfect before they ever get started. You gotta stop. I tend to want to get it perfect before I get going, and it just slows me down. We don't have time. If you have ideas or things to bring out into this planet to make a difference, we don't actually have as much time as people think to do this. So stop trying to get it perfect and just begin. Begin what you're here to do, and do it perfectly and perfect. And start. Next thing is look for where you can develop cash easily. Maybe it's a service business instead of a product, because that you're just exchanging time for dollars. So look at how you can buy your time back as fast as possible and just get started on what you're here to do. And I guess the last thing is that perseverance in the end will, no matter what, will be intelligence. So be very, very persistent in what you're going to do. And funny enough, the universe seems to be a yes-based universe. What does that mean? It tests you. I've discovered it tests you. But if you stay the course and you keep trying to bring it out and bring it out, and sooner or later the universe will actually respond to that. The last thing is for the entrepreneurs or the ones that are bringing it out, when you do it, it's going to shake things up. The people around you are going to think you're nuts. They're going to think you're crazy. It means you're on the right path. Because I'd rather this world is, you might be going sane in an insane world. And, you know, I think it was Mark Twain. He said, if you find yourself on the majority, be very, very scared. So the minority are the ones that pave their own path. So if you're going to get out there and you're going to pave your own path, people are going to call you nuts. It's just the way it goes. It means you're doing what you're here to do. And nobody that built something of their own didn't experience some sort of adversity building it. And if you are and you already run a successful business, then incorporate the people in your company as best you can, because it's been proven that you will actually have more prosperity, 90% more prosperity, by engaging your people. That means in your role as a company. But if you engage the people, 90% more versus 30% less if you're unengaged. So what
they
is
also,
engagement?
They also found that with anarcho-syndicalism as well.
With a what?
Anarcho-syndicalism, where everybody who works at a company actually kind of runs the company too.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like they actually feel like they're a part of the vision. They're able to express their creativity as too, not just like. 1 liter at the top. This is ridiculous. When we engage our company in a way where the people feel like they're vested in it and they're in it, and they want to go and express themselves in your sandbox, in their sandbox with you, you've got yourself something that can change this world. And I feel like if the entrepreneurs start doing that, we can take this planet back. That's my experience of it.
Well, it helps if you have a cause, but unfortunately, the cause will always betray you.
Tell me more.
When you're trying to go out and you put somebody up on a pedestal or an ideal or something like that, whenever you start looking into it, you'll start to realize that you're really wrong about it, because you're only making an assumption based upon limited information. And the more you start to know, the wronger you start to realize that you really are. And that's when you start to kind of have to create something. Like what you're talking before about, you don't have to perfect something before you start. My co-host, when I first started the show, like back in the day, I think like in 2010, he had an idea for a website called infomatrix.com. And I had an idea for just, you know, throwing whatever the hell up as quickly as I could and, you know, build stuff and modulate and change things as I go along. He still hasn't got infomatrix.com up.
You know, that's a really good point. You've impacted and have more listeners than the New Zealand Herald, and you've done that. And
more subscribers to the YouTube channel.
Okay, got it. Well, maybe that's what's coming. By the fact that you just got started, while other people just had ideas and they want to get it perfect, that's why you have a show, and that's why you have so many listeners. So I think that's a perfect example of just getting started, and your listeners have a lot of things that they could just start that could get out there and impact the planet in a positive way. And I bet the ones that are listening, they probably have them already that are going. So I guess what I want to share is just keep going.
Well, you know, and this goes to everybody else as well. I mean, don't feel like, you know, you need to share any loyalty with anybody who inspires you or anything like that, because it's actually the imitation and the fulfillment of your own dreams that those people who inspired you will appreciate hearing about, rather than saying to them, thank you for waking me up or whatever. When people thank me, I'm like, okay, you're welcome. But when people tell me that I inspired them to do X thing, which has had a profound effect and maybe saved somebody's life because they took my advice and turned off my radio show and started living their own dream, that inspires me in return. It's the reciprocation that you need to be getting on, not appreciation for things that people willingly give you for free, because something given has no value.
That's an interesting distinction. So the difference between thanking and inspiration, and if people were to go out and just get started on what they're here to do, and the best full expression of what they're here to do, that is the best, and get inspired. So the difference between motivation and inspiration is inspiration comes within, motivation someone needs to keep telling you to do it. But if people get inspired by hearing these radio shows or these conversations, and they just never, ever tell us ever again, but they go build this huge thing that makes a huge difference on the planet and cleans our water supply or does something amazing. That is the best gift ever.
I mean, I had some guy telling me that he's like, oh, he doesn't have the gift of the gab like me or some other people. And I go, so what, bro? You probably have a whole bunch of skills that I don't have. Why don't you go and be awesome in your own freaking way, okay? You don't have to be like somebody else that you admire.
No, absolutely not. In fact, everyone's got their gifts. And if we're alive, we have something to give that's unique and specific. This is kind of a cheesy saying, but there's like, we're all like snowflakes. We're all made of the same substance, but yet we're different patterns. And so each of us are a unique pattern. And our pattern, I've discovered, if it's not fully expressed into the world, we all miss out. And no one's better above anybody else. And it's just a matter of, we just need to express our pattern into the world and fully express it. And if we don't, it gets lost. And we miss out on that expression. And it's the pattern that's the organic pattern, not the I'm going to climb the corporate ladder pattern. It's the one that's within ourselves. And there's no hierarchy in any of those patterns.
I think Somebody on the United We Strike marathon once said something just before I was going on air there, and I was just tuning in for like 2 minutes, and then he says, nobody can do everything, but everybody can do something.
Yeah.
You know, we all got a part to play. And that's, you know, going back to that seventh man thing yet again, if you see something, you say something, you know, that big brother mantra. Well, yeah. If you see scumbaggery, you should expose scumbaggery as well. And who knows? You might conveniently be that exact person who helped make a decision for another. All right. And I think, what I've been doing, Jeff, is, you know, like, there's so many activists in New Zealand and around the world who don't have video editing skills or a radio show or anything like that. And yet, when I go to protests and I hear these people speak, I think, man, that'd make really good radio. Or, man, that'd make an awesome video. So I just cut out the freaking middleman and I start going to them and start interviewing them and filming them when they're speaking at these freaking protests, you know? But shebang! And can any of these people pay me for what I did for them? Nope. They're an activist, mate. I was like, somebody came and asked me once, Jeff, hey, do you know if you could get me, hook me up with a job or something, Vinny? And I was like, yes, you're asking the wrong guy. I can't provide revenue for other people. But yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that maybe the next level of activism is activism through building building a business that sustains itself, that has the elements of prosperity, people, planet, and perseverance, and has those elements in there, that because then they can sustain their activism and they'll express it through sustaining themselves and their movement and what they're here to do. So maybe business is now becoming a movement for the new era of business, because old business doesn't work. The typical business models, they're just destroying our planet. Something new is being born, and these activists that are out there having a message and trying to making a difference, if they built businesses that expressed that, that would be pretty cool, so they can sustain themselves.
But then, of course, then you've got to fill in all the tax forms and all of that kind of jazz, and it's like, I've found a lot of these people, bro, like, almost without exception, are traumatized by that kind of stuff, because the reason that they're activists is because somebody used that paperwork and used all that nasty stuff against them to destroy their life once, and they had to rebuild it and basically reattune the purpose of their life. Instead of living for themselves, they're living to protect others from the thing that victimized them in the first place. So
yeah,
generating
that's valid. There's other systems that exist that are coming around, which are you know, foundations. There's charities. There's different models, and so
can I actually say something, because this is something inspiring for me. I met a woman called Tabitha Fraser a while ago, mm-hmm. and she wanted to start a record company called BYBR, Bright Yellow Beetle Records, and mm-hmm. I explained the business model like this. You know how a musician is there to play music, maybe practice or whatever, and just do their skill set. Well, what if there was a record company that did all your marketing and advertising and taxes and all of the technical stuff, so that you could just make your music and have somebody else take care of all the things that you are needed to be done in order for you to support yourself and in order for you to spread your music, and they share in the profits with you, right?
And yeah. Absolutely. I mean, that's I think the next level of activism is finding a way to build that system, that you're able to express what you're to do, and then other people, you hire people that are around you or get people enrolled in that project to support you, so you can do what you're here to do and express that music. And it doesn't need to be done through a company. It can be done through projects, NGOs, or things of that nature. And so they don't need to take the typical structure. I think your point of you surround yourself with people. Everyone does what they're good at, and there's people that are really good at filing and organizing, and they love it. That's not my strength. And put those people around you.
So if there are any human filing cabinets out there, send in your application form to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com.
There are people that do love the organizing. I'm sure there are. It's not my thing either. So, but they're out there. They're out there. They love it.
It reminds me of a song. Are you OCD? Yeah, you know me.
So so true, but it's very useful because, man, when it's organized, that's one of the things that actually the system is, it can be extremely organized. And so if we're going to build, as we build new stuff and new inventions, our strength is actually in getting organized.
Well, I thought about it like a growing machine, like an organic machine. You know, when creatures evolve slowly over time, like Darwin's finches, for example, the reason he could tell that each of these finches came from a different island of the Galapagos is because they had a different diet and required a different kind of beak in order to get at that different kind of food. And so over time, after layers and layers and layers, they would develop either a horn or a sharper beak or something of that nature. And I think this is how a modern business would actually work. It's kind of like an evolutionary biological machine, because the current model of business is literally a machine. It's a cog. There is no room to grow. There is no movement. It doesn't slot into different parts of the company automatically. It's basically uniform without uniformity. All right. It's not everybody working as one. It's completely separating everybody from everyone else and expecting them to do their own little part. And then they're surprised when it doesn't work and ballses up the planet.
Yeah. Something new's got to be born. And it's a new system, and you know, it's out there. It's starting to happen, but that's what's going to, when we dissolve the barriers between ourselves and our various to our greatness and who we are, when we dissolve those barriers, and when the corporations dissolve the barriers between corporations and Mother Earth and humanity, when those barriers dissolve, is when we'll be all right. But until then, so something new has to be made, something absolutely new. I'm noticing that the entrepreneurs out there that are willing to learn and to listen and to be fluid with their thoughts, they're actually creating some pretty interesting stuff out there that cleans the water, that is new ways to farm in a better way that doesn't destroy the planet. So they're out there and they're doing it. And it's just, it's really, really important in order for us to build the planet we're here to have, this new era.
Well, I think, what is it? Einstein said something to the effect, there's two things that are infinite, the universe and human stupidity. But I'm not so sure about the former, you know. But it seems to me that there's actually three things that are infinite: human stupidity, human creativity, and the universe. And I think that there's actually a connection there, why the universe is expanding in all directions and doesn't seem to have any signs of slowing down. I think there is a mirroring effect that is happening in the awakening of human consciousness and creativity and empathy. And I can't wait to see it reach fruition so I can actually enjoy it. It might not be my chance, you know. There were certain generations throughout history who basically their entire generation lived through naught but hardship and oppression. And just because, you know, you're born into comfort doesn't mean you should crowd around it and accumulate it and try never to lose it, because nothing lasts forever. And if you're not growing, you're shrinking, you're stagnating, you're not making anything new, you're not making anything different, and you're holding everyone else beneath you back. Why not stop thinking about everybody in terms of them being beneath you and you being above them when you're running the show or you've got the ideas or whatever? What about recognize every single human being around you for the unique pool of universal creativity that they have, and they can contribute something that you would not be able to predict, that you couldn't come up with on your own, that you couldn't even achieve if it was just you trying to do it, regardless of whether you had the blueprints or whatever, because that is how unique everybody is. And isn't it interesting that if everybody's unique, then technically nobody is?
Exactly. And we are, I've discovered that the way to actually change my beliefs of myself is to change how I see others. So if I relate to others as leaders, I find the leadership within myself. So the people that are, we gotta shift how we see each other. It's so easy to look at what separates us. Now I think I feel it's time to look at what unifies us and bring that together and bring that forth. And through that, I feel that we are at the 11th hour of this planet. And, you know, in our lifetime, like we live, let's say 100 years or so, or whatever, it's a bleep for the planet. And there's a saying that evolution doesn't necessarily go at an even curve up. Like, it's not an even thing. It's kind of like a hockey stick. And so information and we're really increasing our ability to evolve as human beings in this period of time. So it's actually speeding up. And in order for us to bring forth this new dimension where we work symbiotically with the earth, we need to recognize and stop looking at what separates us. We need to start looking at what unifies us.
Well, he who has the ability has the responsibility. So if you see a problem that's hurting other people or hurting you or something like that, and you come up with this brilliant idea of how to fix it, don't go and ask somebody who's already doing something similar, hey, bro, maybe you should incorporate this idea into the stuff that you've built your entire life around. Why don't you just do it yourself? All right, cut out the middleman. The middleman's never been good for anybody. I mean, yeah, what's that old saying, bro, that everybody uses all the time? If you want something done right, you've got to do it yourself.
Yeah, and if people start doing what they're here to do in their best expression, then I think that's something, because I think everybody has something inside of themselves that if they expressed it and did it, then it would actually work. There's got to be some grand plan here. There's got to be a big grand plan. So.
Yeah. If people develop this kind of sense of self-suppression, do you think, Jeff, what caused all that? You know, oh, I'm not smart enough. I'm not good enough. Oh, I can't do that. And, you know, oh, that'll never work. It'll never happen, etc. What the hell caused that?
Well, it's not necessarily, you know, that's what's sad. It's not necessarily their fault. You know, they're born into a system where right away they're born, they get injected with a whole bunch of stuff. They're put right into schools that tell that don't necessarily teach the way they learn. So it's not necessarily their fault because they go into that. And it's also an opportunity because you're working against something that doesn't want you to think that you have a gift. And when you do, when you realize it, you have a lot of strength because you persevered through it. So it's very frustrating. And so hopefully, you know, my role is not to build a new school system, but maybe somebody out there's role is that's listening. And so build it. Build something that works for the human, for the way we're designed.
I mean, there's a lot of things that appear wrong about you, you know, as a person to other people, all right? But some cases, yeah, that's actually your unique gift that they're not capable of replicating or even understanding. And people always fear what they don't understand, all right? Like, I think it was back in the 1930s or whatever, there was this young girl, and she had real trouble sitting in class, right, sitting still. And the teacher talked to her mother and said, you know, you really need to see a doctor, you know, and get something done about this. So they do. They go to the doctor, and they talk for a little bit about what's going on with the mother and the daughter. And then the doctor says to the little girl, I'm just going to talk to your mother privately about this, and I'm going to step out for a moment. And as he stepped out with her mother, he turned on the radio, and they stood outside the door. And the mother says, so what do you want to say? And he says, no, nothing, just watch. And as soon as they were out of the room, the little girl got up and started moving to the music. And the doctor turned to her mother and he said, Your daughter's not sick. She's a dancer. Enroll her in a dance school. And that little girl became a soloist for the, I think it was the London Ballet. And she wrote Cats, did the choreography. She met Andrew Lloyd Webber. She's bring enjoyment to millions of people's lives and advanced culture around the world. Today, people would have given her a pill and told her to calm down.
Yeah, we have to keep the arts alive. Without arts, we have no life. So the fact that that doctor could identify that means that doctor could actually see that talent within her and that's where a textbook doesn't apply. So that doctor had enough humanity inside of himself to recognize that greatness. And so, So kudos to that doctor, because that's a big thing. And I don't know if that would happen today. Hopefully it would.
Well, I think this is why everybody needs to take responsibility for what they do and say around others, and particularly children, because it's sort of like, what were they saying, that everything's frequency, and if you say words or certain things, a word of encouragement at the right time. I think, what was that film, Constantine, where they talk about this this battle between good and evil, and that demons and angels were walking among us, whispering in our ears every now and again, and in so doing, the war continues. And I think that's in a large part how we embody our role in the world, is that whether or not we want to inspire people to do good and be better people, or whether we want to corrupt and take advantage of them.
Yeah, and the people that are hearing this conversation, I assume, want to make the world a better place, and that's what it's all about. I have kind of 10 things that I've discovered as you begin to live the path that I've discovered, that you begin to live the path that you're here to live. And I think the first one is I realize that I've been training for it my whole life. Since the moment I was born, it was like every circumstance led me to that point. And I've noticed that as you get on the path of doing the business or the cause you're supposed to do, that mystical things start happening to actually support you when you get in action. It happens after action. And that if you get off course, you'll get redirected. The universe tends to do that. And I have, sometimes in the face of obstacles, I've found that those obstacles get removed when you're doing what you're here to do. And then mentors start to appear and right in the nick of time. Just when you need that information, they appear. And as you start to get on path, I've found that my health improves, and that surprisingly the universe rolls out like a red carpet in a way. And your people find you. The people that you're supposed to build it with, they find you. But it's that first step of action, like the way you began getting these listeners, it took that first step. So I feel like there's many people out there that are comfortable, and it's time to take that first step.
And don't be afraid of like hardship or pain or unsurety or insecurity or any of those other things. I mean, be practical, of course, and keep your costs to a minimum, but at the end of the day, I've found that the most traumatic instances in my life have been the most beneficial for a quickening in my comprehension of my life. You know, it's kind of like, what was it? A friend of mine, he was having his business destroyed, and it was a grown architectural wonderland. Like, this guy had created a venue made entirely out of beautiful landscaping and things like this. It was amazing. It was called The Secret Garden. And then some dude took over the lease of the big property that it was on and commanded that he destroy it. You know, it had been there for like 20 years. It was like an institution. And one of the musicians on the night, he said that sometimes people are like a little ball of iron, and you start hitting it with that fire, you start heating it up, you start punishing it, and all that happens is it turns itself into steel and becomes ever stronger.
And that might be what's happened to humanity.
We've become hardy, haven't we? And it's not through indifference. I think it's because we've all gone through a whole lot of crap. I mean, really, anybody who's gone to school at any time, you know, you name me a person, point a frickin' stick at somebody who hasn't had suffering, pain, and grief. I think these are the things that we need to value and cherish, not avoid. Because if we're avoiding pain and suffering and grief all the time, we don't have that ability that is there to help us learn from those real painful mistakes that often yield the greatest pearls of wisdom. Like, I don't believe in prospective fate. I believe in retrospective fate, okay? Somebody says, like, goes up on American Idol and they say, oh, it's my fate to win American Idol. And guess what? They frickin' lose. Like, I go up and I go, I want to do this, and then I do it. And then later on down the track, I think a few years back, this happened and that happened and that happened and that happened. And these little synchronistic coincidences all managed to come in line. I guess it must have been fate for me doing what I'm doing.
That is the path that is when we're living according to our organic timeline and what our soul signed up for. We know when we know. It's awesome.
Yeah, I know. I get that a lot, Jeff. Thank you very much. Jeffrey Slater, ladies and gentlemen, go Google him. If you want to be in the entrepreneurial spirit or something of that nature, he's got an awful lot of content available for you. Thank you very much for listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show on freedomslips.com. Remember, it's both a listener-supported show and it's a listener-supported network. Donate to which one of us you love best. And if you can't decide, donate to us both. We'll see you again sometime. Thanks for listening.